you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon the stage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, Zander Olivet, on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into adversarial time
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, it's Sunday night. You're listening to The Ooze Outbreak Edition with Jason Sorrell and TC Downey. TC, what's going on with you, man? I kind of talked to your off the last 10 minutes about my fucking day. How are you been?
Not too bad, man. Actually, last night I decided to do story time here on The Ooze. It was a nice hour of me talking to myself, with the exception of, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes of talking with Zach. And then we had a mystery caller from Iowa actually hit us up, and he had some interesting things to say, which of course ended with "fuck you" and "you're an asshole" or something like that. I don't remember what the exact wording of it was, but for our 319 area code caller last night, I do appreciate your intellectual honesty. So, with that in mind, man, Eminent Mind is taking the fuck off. Really looking good. You know, people have been checking out what's going on. We've gotten a little bit of commentary. I noticed you and, what is it, App Sarah? Is that how that's pronounced? App Sarah?
Yeah, I think. I don't know. I don't know, man. App Sarah Kamali.
Yeah, but between you and her, there's a couple of really good comments there. Lehigh had chimed in earlier this week and asked a couple of really good questions. I'm excited about that. At least there's some activity there, and you know, maybe some good conversations will come out of it, and hopefully a lot more than that. So,
right on. Well, that. What we got going on Eminent Mind got me thinking about, you know, what we're going to be doing here tonight. And I know, you know, you can change your mind on this here real fast. But what I was thinking about, the last show that we did, the comic book show, it sucked. You know, just just honest, just to be perfectly honest. And I don't think we had some fun with it, but I don't think we had as much fun as we normally have. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you and I, we have our heads in different fucking places now. Not, you know, that we're thinking about some heavier shit. And we come up here every Sunday night to do this show, and we want to try to be lighthearted. We want to try to be easy, but I don't think either of us are in a place in what we got going on right now where that's what we're thinking about. As a matter of fact, I know for myself personally, the frivolity, the trivial shit that I deal with, I'm trying to turn the volume down on that way, way low. So I was thinking that what we should start doing right now on the Outbreak Edition is basically have an ongoing strategy session. An ongoing discussion about, you know, what we've got going on out in the world, what we're talking about on Eminent Mind, and, you know, maybe get some feedback, maybe get some ideas from people about, you know, what it is they're doing, what it is they're thinking about with, you know, these different things that are going on in the world, these different signs that things aren't the way they used to be, and things aren't going to get any fucking better.
No.
So, you know, like the stuff that Mindflux is saying and stuff like that on sin. So I definitely, you know, I figured that this would be, you know, and also makes it easier for us from now on, because all we really got to do is go, hey, we're going to keep talking about the shit we were talking about last week, and we don't have to worry so much about, you know, coming up with different show topics.
Yeah, I'm down with that. We should, what the hell do they call it? The command center. It should be, you know, Outbreak Edition, whatever, command center, and just we'll do a reoccurring show every Sunday night until we're done talking about this shit. If we're done talking about this shit. I think that's a great idea, Jason. I'm down with it entirely. You know, the whole point of me putting together Eminent Mind was because there's, there's an incredible amount of apathy going in this world. And I don't just mean, you know, people of similar ideology as us, but I mean in general. Nobody wants to fucking do anything. And the people who are acting, well, they're crazier than fuck. They're certainly not acting in the best interest of everybody. So,
right, and the apathy thing is then instilled in us in a lot of ways. I think by the very thing that we're talking about resisting, by the very thing that's kind of coming crashing down, and we're kind of an interesting generation, I think, as far as human history is concerned, because we kind of grew up in this. It was high times for us, basically. Yeah, we had layoffs. Yeah, we had an oil embargo and everything else, and we had gas lines and everything else back in the 70s or whatever. But we grew up, coming up through the 80s and 90s where, you could have everything. You could, you go out, you get a good job, you make a bunch of fucking money, you buy a house and everything else. The possibilities of you succeeding were high. And we grew up thinking, and many of us grew up thinking that this was going to go on forever, that the United States, we were the pinnacle of the world as far as, the Western development in every way, and that we were always going to be the top, strongest military, best economy, most innovative and everything else. And here we are, 2011, and it's circling the fucking toilet. It is, the economy's taking a shit. Capitalism has gone, in my opinion, about as fucking far as it can go. Our politicians, they couldn't find their ass with both hands in their back pockets, and they'll lie to you about it. And we're reaching a point where, we need to start, I need to start definitely thinking about what am I going to do? How do you get along in this world? And make sure that you're ready for the inevitable collapse of things. But also with the environment being the way it is, with these conditions being in place, also making the most of what is going on, trying to take advantage of the opportunities that are available. I think that has a lot to do with the sly hand theme we've got going on Eminent Mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly while things are still structured somewhat and there are avenues that you can take advantage of, it's definitely something that, I don't know, I would say is, beast approved, for lack of better terminology, to get what you can while you can,
right.
take advantage of every system that's out there right now. Like, for instance, you're a tattoo artist. I don't know if you're paying quarterly taxes and actually carrying a business license or not, but if you are, but if you're not, man, take advantage of whatever free government services you can get a hold of. Hell, I've been picking up the phone and calling, City Hall and every other place trying to find out what programs they got going. What can you, what can you do to stretch your buck by using theirs?
Right. And yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. It's not just because there's a lot of people who go, why use the system? Why not just tear it down? Why not oppose it? And my opinion is, why not do both? You want to be as independent from that system as possible, but you want to make sure that you're using as much of their resources as you possibly can as well. I mean, it's guerrilla warfare in a way. You're milking their resources so that the eventual collapse occurs that much faster.
You're causing decay is what you're doing. It's very much like any fungus does. It goes inside and eats what is left living. So,
right. Or it's erosion. Exactly. It's little things. It's not being out in the streets. Throwing a riot. Having a riot or whatever. Or throwing a Molotov cocktail or whatever. I mean, which if that's your thing, if that's your bag, and it comes to that in your world, if that's the point you reach, these kids that ride in London, I kind of want to talk about that at some point. While it's not the way I probably would have done things. I understand, you know, looking at it, what's going on. The thing is I think most of those kids rioting in London didn't understand why they were rioting. They were just a herd being pushed in a particular direction. And that's something else I think we're going to be talking about in the next few nights, that, you know, that the herd is starting to be pushed. There are people starting to try to, you know, we talk about other people being this herd mentality, these sheeple. Well, there's a stampede coming, and it's either, you know, riding that fucking wave when it happens or getting run over.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, it's not only riding the wave when it happens, but if we plan it right, if you look at things in the right light, I have a feeling that you can almost, in a way, incite that type of thing. There's just something I've kind of been noticing, and I was curious if anybody else has caught on to this, but it seems like these waves of violence, public mass violence, are happening in some kind of a sequence. And so it's like they're moving westwardly. If you think about it, just last year, maybe the year prior, the whole Egyptian thing, you know, with the internet being shut off and that whole civil unrest that was going. I mean, we know the Middle East has been pulsing civil unrest since the beginning of time. So, you know, I would assume that that's, you know, where the actual origin of our problems coming from. But it seems to me that it's sort of undeniable to think that there isn't some kind of connected thing happening here. We've all discussed the ideas of memoplexes and, you know, different ideas taking hold of people and kind of setting into that. And I think, you know, this is something that we really need to examine, because I believe that with enough, you know, enough really observation of it, we could begin to actually build a solid case for this kind of communal existence actually having some, and, you know, don't everybody burn me at the stake for suggesting this, but there might be a larger reason for why these kind of things are happening the way they are beyond what we think they are.
Right. I know what we're looking at. We're also looking at different economic models. We're looking at different social models that kind of have, you know, might have some sort of explanation to this phenomenon. But, you know, it does. It's moving westerly. It's moving through Western civilization, although, you know, you could argue that it's moving through the third world. It's definitely, you know, or it's been, you know, brimming at the third world for a long time, and now it's starting to finally boil over into Western civilization. And it's moving west, just like you're saying, and I think it's going to happen in waves. I think it's going to get, you know, it's going to get more and more intense with each, you know, each occurrence. And it's the workers that are rising up. That's what I see going on in Egypt. It was the common man for whom there were no more opportunities. There were no more jobs. The option to go out and earn a living didn't exist. And they needed a change. They needed a change in their government. That's what they try to accomplish. Now, whether or not that change in their government will bring about opportunity for those people, I have no idea. I don't think it's there yet, which is why I think it's going to continue to happen in waves. The same thing in Libya. You know, the workers, the working class, they don't have the opportunity. They don't see the option to go out and make a living. And they retaliated against the wealthy, basically, or the people in power. In London, you know, it took a kid getting shot, which this kid was no fucking choir boy. You know, don't get me wrong. This kid was a thug, okay? But you could argue whether or not the police, you know, had reason to shoot this kid, whether or not that merited a death sentence. I don't know. But all it took was that little bit of spark, man, to set the workers off, to set these kids that have been living on the dole, that have been living on welfare. And they knew. They've been in the system for so long. They're, you know, the second, third generation of children who are on welfare, who realize that there are no other opportunities. So if it means, you know, do a smash and grab and get, you know, and get something for yourself, that at the very least you could fucking sell someplace else and have a little bit of change in your pocket, then do it. You know, that's what I mean about these kids. I don't think they understood necessarily what it is, you know, what their movement was caused by or what it represented. All it was for them was, hey, there's some free shit that I can go get, and I'm not going to have this opportunity again because there are no more fucking opportunities. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that's absolutely you know, the situation is desperate in so many ways. I know people at this point that are 6 months between jobs or longer, and they're good qualified people. They don't have anything, you know, inherently wrong with them. They haven't gone out and robbed a million banks or fucking, you know, whatever, plotted a murder out or some shit or done some corporate espionage scheme. But these are, you know, everyday, hard-working, blue-collar people that, you know, maybe they got a ticket for marijuana 10 years ago that's still being held against them, or maybe just their credit's fucked. And you can't even get a job if you have bad credit now. So,
right. Well, maybe the education that they paid for, they put $100,000 into an education that isn't worth shit. They get themselves a bachelor's degree, and they go out to try to find a job, and they're competing with every other motherfucker about a bachelor's degree anymore. It's just like a high school diploma used to be back in the 80s. That it's you know, you're just like anybody else. These kids in San Francisco, I don't know if they were kids or whatever, but there was a riot or a public demonstration or something going on in San Francisco, and the government responded by shutting down the internet. And that's something people need to think about, I think, is that as we talk about these different things, as we start, you know, kind of coordinating our efforts, as we have these different strategy sessions, we might have to look for an alternative means of communication. Because go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, absolutely. I'm actually reminded last night I discussed this police officer here in Sarasota County, which is maybe an hour south of me, tops. This guy was fired from his job for joining up with the Sovereign Citizens Movement, or who are declaring himself a sovereign citizen. He wasn't necessarily even participating in any kind of activities. He just filed some paperwork thinking that it somehow was going to release the government's claim on him. And you know, they came and they fucking took his job. And it just kind of makes me wonder how long before, you know, they're coming to knock down our doors just because we're talking about this shit every Sunday night for 2 hours. You know, the two kids in London got arrested for, you know, discussing shit on Facebook, and nothing even came out of what they were discussing. So, yeah, it's just crazy.
Right, and so we need to, but we need to have our communication. We need to have our freedom of speech and to engage in it while we have the opportunity. And we need to start, you know, preparing. Well, it's my thinking, and I know because we're going to have a couple of nutballs. We're going to go, what's this we shit you're talking about? It's my opinion that I need to start preparing, and that I think it would be wise if other people did as well. But what the fuck you do is up to you, man. Hopefully, if you decide you want to do something, you kind of recognize these things as being something that it's a wake-up call, and you want to get some shit going, or you want to get, you know, you want to make sure that you and your family are in the best possible position to ride this thing out, then definitely, you know, hopefully you tune in, hopefully you call in. And the number to call in, by the way, is 347-989-1371. And we're going to be, this is going to be kind of a running kind of talk show now, where it's going to be just the topics come up, we're going to roll on with it. There's really no set agenda here, although, you know, if we get a good idea and we want to run with it, we'll definitely, you know, schedule that out. Go ahead.
I was just going to kind of put this out there that, you know, the thing of this is that if you're sitting at home right now and, you know, and I hate to say this, and it sort of sounds like a spoiled brat, but if you're sitting at home now and you feel under-challenged or you feel disenfranchised in the slightest bit, there's probably reasoning for it. Now, the proportion of it, obviously, would be put into perspective with your psychological maturity, but most likely, you know, you're being treated like an idiot and on purpose from what I've seen.
Right, right, yeah. If you feel oppressed, you know, don't think it's your imagination. I want to say it's Black Flag that says, not my imagination, I've got a gun at my back. That's how we live. That's how the society has been since, you know, since forever, probably. that whether you realize it or not, there was a gun at your back. There's a gun at your back 24/7. People who are going to determine what it is you can or cannot do. People who are going to determine, you know, what it is that you do with your resources, you do with your time. And the parameters, the limitations that are placed on us are becoming more and more restrictive. And so that gun that you feel at your back, it's becoming more and more of a solid object. It is becoming more real every day.
What's interesting to me, I was browsing through that article you posted, National Blowoff Day, that you posted on Eminent Mind. As I was looking through it, I actually thought not just about what the injury would be to, you know, the capitalist system. Everybody in America just said, you know what, today's October 3rd or October 31st or whatever fucking day was agreed upon, I'm not going to work. The type of retaliation, I mean, I just imagine after a couple of years of this sort of thing happening, you know, soldiers kicking in your door to make you go to work that day.
Right, yeah, and it's, well, the way I saw it, or the way I see it, and yeah, that definitely could be a possibility, but I don't think that one day off where everybody stopped doing something would slow this government down one bit, would slow our economy down one bit. I think what it would do, though, is remind everybody that participated, everybody that was inconvenienced by the fact that nobody was at their jobs, okay, that the system is made up of people, that the people that are engaged in that system, they are the ones that have the power. They are the ones that are in control. It's just they've forgotten. It's been stolen from them. They're not awake to it anymore. And like I was saying, that you know, in that article, I think that the next year or after 2 years or 3 years of this going on, the system would actually try to adjust. And they would go, okay, we're going to have National Blow-Off Day. It's a national holiday now. So on National Blow-Off Day, you know, nobody come to work. All government offices will be shut down and all the other bullshit, okay? Which means we'd have to change it up. We'd have to have some different kind of national don't-go-to-work day or whatever. But it's, you know, it's, I think it's more of a reminder to people that it's a choice. It's not, everybody feels like they have to go do these things. Everybody feels like they have to have a job. They have to have that money. They have to be able to pay their bills and everything. And it's a choice. We place ourselves in that situation. The oppression that you feel is a choice. The freedom that you want is a choice. And we have to remind people to exercise that choice, to exercise that sense of liberation, that sense of being able to do something. Otherwise, it goes away. It weakens, just like a muscle. It's atrophic right now. We haven't flexed that muscle in so long, our choice, that it's practically non-existent.
I can't disagree with that one bit. You know, I hate to say it, man, but a lot of our problem is that we, as a species, we can't really unify on one thing or anything, for that matter. There always seems to be, you know, this great push towards some sort of unison in us, and something I've been thinking about a lot lately. You know, we're told, on the one hand, that it's okay to be an individual, you know, especially in this free country. You know, everybody's an individual. I remember those fucking out to lunch rulers when I was in middle school. You remember you had rulers that said little sayings like out to lunch or don't worry, be happy. It was the beginning of what I call the customization era, where everything had to be custom. You know, you had those license plates that were airbrushed out with your names. You know, you might get t-shirts and ball caps that were done in airbrushes. And I saw this kind of revive a few years ago in the hip-hop culture, but it seems like there's all this pressure towards individualizing yourself, but at the same time, this constant back push of some form of unity, you know, cultural tolerance. And I'm not necessarily sure that these things should be offered so freely. I'm not going to say that I'm arguing against any kind of cultural tolerance, but what I'm saying is, you know, we shouldn't have to accept something just simply because it makes us more tolerant. We should still be allowed to question freely without the assumption that we're operating from some sort of bias, or if we are necessarily are operating from some sort of bias, that should still be allowed. You know, I just think that that's one of the things that's really going wrong here. We allow ourselves to be isolated. It was interesting. I had a conversation with this kid, John Knight's his name. Anyway, I had a conversation with him, and one of the things that he was discussing was how isolated he felt. And the funny thing is, this dude lives in an apartment complex with at least a couple of dozen buildings in it that are two stories high, so I'm assuming minimum 9 units in each building. If 3/4 of those are occupied, you know, you're looking at several hundred residents. But he feels isolated.
You know, that's the irony of the same cultural phenomenon you were just discussing. On the one hand, you know, they're telling you, you know, you should be proud of being an individual. You know, be yourself, be unique. You're unique. You're a fucking snowflake, just like everybody else. But then they define the terms on which you can be an individual. You know, you can be an individual by your mode of dress, but if you're outside the fucking parameters of what's trendy, well, then you're a pariah. You can be an individual about your ideas, but just like you're saying, if your ideas don't reflect the cultural norm, if your ideas go outside those different parameters, well, then you're a pariah. When they do want you to gather, they want you to gather under particular banners that they define for you. So that's what's missing, is the ability to think for yourself, the ability to decide for yourself, to come to your own conclusions and, you know, motivate yourself in your own direction. And then if there are people moving that direction with you, that's when you become a force. That's when you actually start moving the herd, when you have people who are like-minded and gather under a banner that they determine for themselves. And, again, that's where we see this workers' movement going. That's what we kind of see going on. The problem with the worker is that they lack the intelligence of the intellectual. They lack the physical prowess and the spirit of the warrior. And they lack the charisma. They lack the ambition of the businessman. And it's the intellectual, the businessman, or the warrior that seem to be moving things. And it's a cyclical kind of situation. I sent you that article. And I know that, again, this is something we're going to be covering in a future show, if we don't get to it tonight. The worker, the reason we're good drones, the reason we're good slaves, is because we're not overly ambitious. We're not overly intelligent. We're not necessarily, you know, strong in body or spirit, and we don't necessarily have a great deal of charisma and ambition. And I'm not speaking for anybody in particular. I'm saying that as a whole, if you're part of that workforce, these are the traits that have been bred into you. These are the traits that have been programmed.
Right on, man. I mean, it kind of goes all the way back to medieval times. Daddy was a blacksmith, so I'll be a blacksmith too.
You know, we're serfs.
Yeah, well, the whole point that I think is interesting about that is that it was based on genetics and not based on capability, will, or anything like that. So what you ended up with was resentful monarchs, you know, ineffective blacksmiths, you know, crappy bakers, terrible cooks, awful tattoo artists. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. People who weren't, this wasn't what they were, this wasn't their potential. It was just their lot in life, and it was accept your lot in life. And now, I mean, they've taken that idea, and they say, well, you know what, the lot in life doesn't cut it. So let's tell everybody that you can be whatever you want to be. You can be a rock star. You can be a star athlete. You can be the president of the United States. All you got to do is go out and get it. They don't tell you that the ways to go out and get it are closed to most people. That, you know, even here in the United States, I mean, 36 of the goddamn presidents here in the United States are related in some way to royal families in Europe. You know, closely related to 36 of the fucking presidents we've had. And the other ones who aren't related that closely still have some sort of relation to those folks. The ruling party is still the fucking ruling party.
Right. I mean, and what it really comes down to, it's not world domination anymore, that anybody's searching after. The world has been dominated. And as the rest of us are just fucking stupid to see it, at least in its entirety.
Right. And it's, and as I've said in previous shows, I don't think that there's a group of people. I don't, that's the sad thing, is I don't think there's an intelligence behind this, this dominating force. I think it's a system that we've all fed into. It's a system that we've all helped establish. It's a system that we continue to prop up, and it's fucking unthinking. It's, it doesn't care. It doesn't consider. It doesn't use its resources in the best possible way. It's just the system. And until, you know, until there's something significant to happen that causes that thing to fall apart, you know, it's falling apart on its own. And what's dangerous about that is that as it falls apart on its own, well, it's going to take a whole bunch of us with it. That this slow decay that's going on is going to cause the decay of our species. It's going to cause the slow decay and demise of every fucking thing attached to it.
Yeah, well, that, that part's obvious, but I also think that it's sort of... it's sort of inherent. I mean, for any empire to fall, for any dynasty to end, that there has to be a great deal of tragedy that happens. You know, the Roman Empire didn't just like fizzle off necessarily. Well, I shouldn't say they. I should say they did fizzle off. They didn't just, you know, explode at the end. It wasn't going out with guns blazing. It was a fizzle out. There were a series of heavy blows that happened to the actual cultural structure of the Roman Empire, and those things eventually led to the deterioration. And along the way, a lot of people were, you know, they were starved out, sickened out, killed off, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, this was, and we think about the Roman Empire, you think about at its height that, you know, they were building these roads to forever. They were building, you know, they were building all, they had all kinds of infrastructure going on. They had, you know, they were seeing, you know, technological advances unlike anything that had ever been seen in the world. And then when it started to fall apart, well, you know, all these different arteries started to choke off. These people that were wealthy one day were dying in the streets the next. And it's cyclical. Just like, you know, the whole thing, we're seeing it happening right now. As a matter of fact, in Egypt, just to bring, you know, back up to the point where we were talking about with this this cycle of people, in intellectuals, the ambitious, the business people, and then the warrior class. It was the workers who revolted. And that's what we're seeing, is this worker revolt going on. The people realize that there are no jobs, there are no opportunities, that the fucking system has run, it's run itself into the ground. So they revolt. Well, the people that were in control of Egypt were the business class, were the people who were ambitious. That's what they had. They had charisma. When they got taken out, who rose up to bring back order? It was the fucking warrior class. The workers didn't rise up. The workers didn't take control of that country. The warrior class, the military, stepped up and filled the void. So it's continuing the same cycle, which is why I think we're saying this hasn't ended. The thing in Egypt is going to keep going. These things are going to be, it's going to be one wave after another, and it's going to continue to crash until the whole thing falls apart.
Right, and then they're going to have some time for desolation. That's, I mean, I can't think of any one country that's immediately reformed after that, any empire. When they suffer a crippling blow like that, there's usually a period of time that's desolate. It's, you know, third world in nature. You know, some countries still haven't come back from that. I'm thinking of Russia, in particular, one that we've recently seen collapse, the communist USSR.
Right, things are still bad in Russia. They're talking about going back to communism, and we could have made the point in the chat room. And if you want to call in again, the number is 347-989-1371. We could have made the point in the chat room that in Egypt, it wasn't about work. It was about fresh food. It was about, or fresh water. It was about food. Well, again, this, we're talking about a group of people who, I mean, the wealthy had food and water. The, you know, the people that had money had food and water. The military had food and water. It was the people who weren't of that one of those classes. Now, they're not the intellectuals. They're not the business class, and they're not the warrior class. They're the drones. So even if it wasn't about work, it was about that class of people not having opportunities, not having the means to sustain themselves. So, you know, no food, no water in Egypt. And what we're going to see here, if we're not careful, is a rise up of the workers here in the United States, a rise up of the working class, who will riot, who will do whatever we do And what will result is a quashing, basically, of all the people by the military, by the warrior class.
Right. They got to put us back in the line. I mean, the whole thing, we would really have to just, as a human species, start thinking differently about the world. And we're obviously not ready for that. You can look down the street and see people with, you know, DVD players in every fucking place that they can put them inside their vehicle. They're too busy looking at the dazzling lights still, even though, you know, their welfare check is ending next week, and, you know, they've been out of work for a year and a half, but that's okay because they can sell, you know, some marijuana, and they're not going to go to jail for a real long time with that. But you shouldn't have to really put yourself in that kind of situation, you know, to live a good life. I don't give a fuck if you're, you know, the Christian down the street or you actually worship Tom Blackwood. I mean, you got to be smart enough to realize that you shouldn't have to put yourself in a dangerous situation like that to provide for your own family. And if you do, well, then what protection is the government really offering you?
Well, the dangerous situation you're talking about, in many ways, is set up by the system. It's the system's fault that whatever it is you're trying to do is considered dangerous. And, it's going to be a matter of, again, it's people realizing it, they have to do for themselves, that they can't rely on the system. And our generation, those of us, you know, between the ages of 25 and 50, those, we're going to have the hardest time adjusting because we grew up in a world where everything was shiny and all the opportunity in the world was ours for the taking. We got a caller on the line. Let me go ahead and bring him on here.
All right.
Six, okay, it didn't work. All right, he went off again. Hang on a second.
Hey.
616 area code, you're on the news. What's going on, man?
Hey, that's Pop.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Nothing. I was calling him when I know you were still talking about Egypt on the speaker. There's the 2-second delay or whatever the fuck it is. So when I called in, it was an entirely different conversation.
No, that's fine, man. If you got something to say on Egypt, I mean, we can hit that, dude. We got all night.
Well, Egypt's a unique situation where the military stepped up to defend the rights of the people. Where we're looking at Syria right now, where they're having peaceful protests similar to what Egypt had, and the military is fully backing the leadership to the point where they're killing hundreds of civilians a day. Civilians who are completely unarmed and have offered no resistance.
Right, and this is going to go on over and over and over again. You're going to see this in Greece. You're going to see this in Libya, where, you know, it's the Libyan forces, the official Muammar Gaddafi forces are being taken down, but it's NATO that's taking them down. And with the Egyptian thing, like, yeah, the Egyptian military did support the people, did support the workers initially through that process. But now it's not the workers that are in control. It's not the fucking people that are hungry and without fresh water that are in control. It's the military. So these people still are not in a position where they can go and do for themselves. And that's, you know, we can talk all day long about what's going on in Syria and Egypt and everything else. I know to some extent we have to give a shit. But I'm more concerned about what's going on in my own fucking backyard and how the hell we're going to deal with it.
Yeah, I don't really see those issues ever happening here, mostly just because we're lazy. I mean, when the unions go on strike, it's mostly fat dudes standing on the street corner with signs. They're not ready to fucking rise up. They're just waiting for the next paycheck.
Well, last night I actually sat down and figured it out. We have roughly 3+ million people unemployed in the United States right now.
Yeah.
I know that doesn't sound like an alarming number when you think about the fact that there's, you know, some odd billion people in the world, like 6 billion or something like that. But when you sit and think about the fact that the United States is only figured right now, the last census showed it at like 314 million people. You know, 10% is a pretty solid number, man. And most of those people have been out of work for a really, really long time. Like I said, I have friends that, you know, that there's honestly nothing wrong with them that could go, you know, for 6 months to a year between jobs.
Well, yeah, and there's that issue. And there's also the issue of the people who are unemployed who want to be unemployed because they're collecting benefits. I meet people at these schools down here who have been extending their unemployment repeatedly because they just don't want to go back to work. Then there are those who are trying to find work, and employers, because people aren't afraid to buy shit, just can't afford to hire them on. It's it actually goes back to people taking care of themselves. We have more workers than we have business owners, and that is an issue.
Well, why do these people have to go find work to take care of themselves? Why do these people have to go work for somebody else to succeed to their basic needs? Why can't they just go get food? Why can't they just go get water? Why can't they just go build themselves a shelter?
Because the government owns the land.
Right. Well, yeah, and these things that used to be considered inherent rights in this country, you know, go fucking west, young man, and do your thing. These things are gone now. When, you know, I know that I could go out, I could walk outside, even here in Austin, Texas, in the middle of the goddamn city, I could walk outside and I could find enough food to sustain my family for the day quickly, with no issues, without spending a dime. It's not going to be the greatest food. It's not going to be what, you know, is considered acceptable food, but I could do it. I could feed my family a nutritious food with just what's available out in the world right now. But I'm told I can't do that. If I were to do that, it would be considered child abuse. If I took my family and I said, you know what, we're just going to go out into the woods and we're going to find some, you know, boards or whatever and build ourselves a shelter, that would be considered child abuse. But these are
really
things that
I've never heard of that.
What's that?
You have it considered child abuse.
It would be child endangerment. If I had my family living out in the woods in a structure that I built with my own two hands that wasn't inspected, they would come take my kids away for child endangerment. If I fed them bugs and twigs and nuts and berries and didn't provide them a meal cooked on a stove with food bought from a grocery store, that would be considered neglect.
But do you really have that worry? I mean, if it came down to that issue and you were where to go to do that, would you really have that fear if some CPS dude driving out in the middle of the woods to come find you? The kids probably be strong enough to kill them.
I have children, dude. I have that fear every day.
That's fucked up. Yeah, I've never even heard of that situation. I got a buddy, when he's hungry, he goes down to the fucking river and he fishes. Comes back, cleans it up, gives it to his kids. It's hunting season, he goes out, he goes over places he probably shouldn't, brings back a meal for a month. His kids would be perfectly all right. And nobody would fucking bother calling CPS just because his kids would be happy.
Right, but if they did call, the first thing they would do is come into the house, go into the cabinets, look in the refrigerator, and they would take a measure if there was food there. And whether that was considered acceptable food or not would be on their shoulders and not yours.
Right. That's my point exactly. My kids could be fat and happy on what I could produce from a day's effort of scrounging, but it wouldn't matter to the government. That doesn't meet the government's minimum standards, and the minimum standards are bullshit.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to go right now. It's like this whole argument rests on the competence of that system, and obviously that system is incompetent. It can't protect every child. It can't even take all the child away from their parents. They could come out and do that, but would they? I mean, there's a lot of CPS people. They walk around, as long as the kid's fed and clothed, it doesn't really fucking matter. As long as they're not eating dog food.
Yeah, there's extremes in either direction. I agree with that. I mean, there's cases where they're going to a house with people that are obvious crystal meth addicts because there's no, you know, signs of there actually being illegal drugs there. At that point, they won't take the children away. But more than likely, good, honest people are finding out that they're the first ones to get fucked on it.
A kid
That's
shows up in elementary school with green hair. A kid shows up to elementary school with green hair. He wanted his hair dyed green. Or a kid shows up to elementary school with a mohawk. It's the haircut he wanted, and his parents indulged him in that desire. CPS is at their house going, you can't do that.
See, not here. Not here, man.
No, here in the United States.
Here, no,
here,
not here
US.
In my state. I see it every day. There's
right.
fucking 5-year-olds up with colored mohawks all over the place. There's children coming with shaved heads. They're hanging out with their dad with a swastika on their arm every day. I think it's a lot of it is location. Around here, that shit is just normal. Your kid wants a mohawk? Cool. Oh, you want to go live in the woods? Cool. I think a lot of it is location-based, which is a lot of the
what?
Issues I hear coming from people. Is
what state are you in?
I'm in Michigan, man.
In
we
Michigan?
Have the highest
okay.
unemployment.
Well, yeah,
I can see that.
I can see also that in Michigan they've kind of given up. The government, the system's like, you know what? These people are just about broken.
Well, yeah. Did you hear what our governor is doing?
No, I haven't. What's going on with your governor?
Oh, this is fucking fantastic. This guy has instituted a policy giving him the right to remove local government officials and institute corporations in financial control of the area. They've already taken over one city, I believe it's up north a little bit, where the average is down south. I don't know where the fuck it's at. Benton Harbor? Yeah. Here, Lex, you want to tell it?
Hey, guys.
Wasn't RoboCop set in Detroit, Michigan?
No,
you'd expect Omni-Consumer Products to eventually come in and take over, right? I was making a little joke there.
It just got quiet. I came in the middle of the joke, so apparently I didn't get it. No, our governor has decided he took over Benton Harbor a little bit earlier this year. Benton Harbor's income per capita was sitting at about $10,500 a year. And he went in and he made everyone step down and put his own people in. And within the 6 months that he was in there, their income per capita actually dropped by $2,000.
That's just ridiculous. But the issue, I guess the issue I would have, and it's the issue we have here all over the country, is what are we doing about it? What are the people who are in that situation doing about it? We took a $2,000 hit every year, but I'm satisfied with what little baubles I have and what little distractions are made available to me. So I might complain and I might grouse and everything else, but am I doing shit about it? Because this system we talk about, the system that is oppressing us, we are that system. We're the ones who prop it up. We're the ones who engage it. We're the ones who allow it. We've forgotten that it's our responsibility in many ways.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. There's actually rallies and protests that are being held up here in Michigan to get him out of office. We're trying to get him out of office. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of action. Not a lot of people are willing to make the effort to go and say that they're unhappy with him. So the people that get hurt the loudest are the ones that are happy with him.
So how do you fight that apathy? How do you fight that complacency where, you know what, it bothers me. It's irritating and everything, but it's not so irritating that I'm willing to do something about it. The analogy of you're cooking a frog in boiling water. You know, all you got to, you turn the heat up incrementally. You turn the heat up a little bit by a little bit, and that frog will not move. It'll boil to death. And that's what you see going on in the United States. As Wickedbug pointed out, we're not going to have riots in the streets like they had in the third world. We're not going to have that like they had in Egypt, or maybe even, you know, like they had in London. It might happen, but not to that extent. We're not going to have that kind of regime change here in the United States. They're going to fucking burn us little bit by little bit by little bit, and we're going to continue to accept the loss of this freedom, the loss of that liberty, the loss of the ability to do this, that, or the other, so we have nothing left but a number and our assigned tasks for the day.
Exactly. And I find it disgusting. And, you know, part of it, I think, is that the masses, they look at these freedoms that are getting taken away from them as something that protects them, when really it's the complete opposite. But the government masks these taking away of our freedom under different titles. And these people that don't put the effort in to actually learn what's going on, they don't see it. And so sooner or later everything's going to disappear because everyone is so uneducated, then they're unmotivated to get educated. You literally have to throw this stuff in their face. And some people are just downright adamant about remaining ignorant.
Right, right. You're so inured in the system that they'll even fight to protect it. So, and that's, I guess, you know, we've kind of established, we've established here over this last hour that, you know what, it, the system is broken. We see it. We can demonstrate it. We can see that, you know, it is flawed. It's fucked up. I guess the question is, like, you see yourself, you're sick of it. It's sickening. What do we do? What do we do as individuals? What do we do as a group? What do we start doing to make a change, to make it happen?
Well, I know personally myself, I run a political blog, which I advertise almost daily. Anybody that I work with, anyone I have in contact with, if they have questions about what's going on, I pride myself in having the knowledge politically to be able to answer their questions so they understand. I think that's a very big and good step that anybody can do that knows what they're talking about, to approach people they know have no idea what's going on, you know, and be available and offer that solution.
So the first step being educate yourself so that you have that knowledge, you have those resources, and then the next step being educate others, let other people know what's going on. And I think putting together a blog, putting the information out there is, you know, is awesome. It's definitely the way to go. But are you ready for the internet to be shut down? Are you ready for your method of communication taken away?
Hey, I took a phone away from Org.
Right, right. Yeah, are we ready for that eventuality where, for whatever reason, if riots start here in Austin, and that's the excuse for them to send in the military and lock us all down?
We're a big enough city here where communication is spread by word of mouth. That's how most of the things in the city actually operate, is word of mouth. You tell somebody, that person tells somebody else, and you know enough people where eventually there's a shitload of people at one place going, hey, what's good? I wanted to comment on the education thing.
Oh, go ahead.
Real fast. And the problem with educating people is most people, especially the ones that are the most downtrodden by what's been going on, are too busy trying to fix their lives. If they have the willpower to fix their lives, they're too busy trying to just work and survive as is, let alone spending the buku amounts of time to educate themselves about the issues that are going on around them, which can be a full-time job. There is a lot of shit going down at any given time, and just to have the energy to do that and take care of what you have to take care of every fucking day can be too much.
Well, if you got a group of 100 people who are beating their heads against the wall, and you look up one day and you go, you know what? I'm not going to beat my head against the wall today. I'm walking the fuck away from this, and this isn't working for me. And you go over to your brother and you go, hey, man, stop beating your head against the wall. And he says, no, I want to keep doing this. All you can do is wait for him to realize that he doesn't have to beat his head against the wall, that he needs to stop doing that shit. So the most you can do is hope that other people, once you stop beating your head against the wall, that other people come to the same realization, either by, you know, your example, they see that you're not doing it anymore, so they stop doing it too, or they realize their head hurts or whatever. People to do something.
Offer them an alternative. By offering them an alternative, I don't mean walking up and going, hey, man, read this piece of paper, tell me what you think. You go, no, look at what I've done. You can do that too.
See, I think what's interesting to me, and I honestly think that the only way that you're ever going to actually cut into this, and I guess I should point out there is another caller on the line, I'll make this quick so we can pull that on. But the hippies seem to have had the right idea. They just didn't have a way to mass communicate this idea at that time. There wasn't the internet. But they started forming communes. And inside of these communes, they were able to actually take care of their basic needs, which gave them the ability to then focus on improving you know, educating themselves and improving their standing in that way, because their basic needs are all taken care of. At this point, Jason has pointed this out multiple times, it's a rat race just to build the lower levels of Maslow's proverbial hierarchy of need.
Well, see, I got to make point on the hippie thing. Some of them were doing communes. Most of them were just drug addicts. I mean, Hyde and Ashbury was the high dive cultural center for the fucking hippies. But if you go and look at the actual history of that place, it was riddled with drugs, violence, and just murder.
Sure,
because that's what was happening. And the ones who were productive became overran by the unproductive ones.
What I'm saying here, Sean, is this. What I'm saying is that you have to get groups of like-minded people together in closer proximity to actually be able to affect the reality. It's obvious that there aren't enough people looking at this shit going, wait the fuck a minute for anything to happen. Otherwise, you know, the severity of the situation wouldn't be, you know, riots in our former mother country, England. The situation of the severity would be happening right here on the streets. So what I'm saying is that this is one idea I think that we could actually be put into place. But before we get into all that, let's see what's up with this caller.
Oh, he hung up, dude.
Oh, shit. All right.
Hey, can I say something about
our... If you're listening in, call back in and we'll get you on the air. I wanted to address this whole commune thing. And I agree, the hippies did it wrong. Part of the issue was communication. Part of the issue was a lot of them had the wrong fucking idea. Just like the kids riding in London, that there wasn't any political motivation. There wasn't any social motivation. It was just the thing to do, to show up and follow the trends. And when you got a group of fucking kids who that's what they've been told to do all their lives, follow the trends, follow the line, stay in line, toe the line, or whatever, well, that's what you get, man. That's what you have to work with. And if we go back to the commune kind of situation, we're going to see that again. But there was a time in this country where the commune was your family. You know, there were six, seven, eight of you, brothers and sisters and shit, and you all worked in the same, you know, worked in the same plot of land and what have you. Let me bring this dude on because you just called back in. Hang on a second. 678 area code, you're on the U's. What's going on, man? Area code 678, you are on the U's.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Hi, this is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L. If COINTELPRO cuts us off, you can look for me online. That's Mary Neal. Now, you, as I understand it, you are looking for solutions to this mess that America is in, as far as the widening gap between the rich and the poor and the other social problems that we have. Is that correct?
We're talking about different strategies and talking about the issues we're facing. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Well, I want you to know I'm very glad to talk to you. That is what I deal with every day, all day, and I have been for the last 6 years. And here's the solution, sir. The solution is to boycott for justice. And you can put that in your browser, boycott, the number four, and the word justice. Now, a lot of the unions, a lot of the different human rights organizations, a lot of the environmental groups, they are all protesting. They're protesting. Really what it comes down to is corporate takeover of American government. There's been a corporate takeover because every bad decision that is made, it benefits a corporation somewhere. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay, do you agree with that? And so what's happening is, the boycott for justice is an opportunity for everyone to not be so fragmented. We need to all get together because we're all battling the same thing, and that is corporate misdeeds, government misdeeds. And government and corporations have sort of merged now, and they're coming after the average American. They've already come after the blacks. They're really coming after the whites. They're coming after environmentalists. They're coming after the school teachers. They're coming after, just the general masses. And so what's happening is that we need to stop being fragmented and get together. So what I propose is that one day a month, on the 9th of every month, because all year long, this is 2011, so on the 9th of every month, that will be 9-11. 9-11 is an emergency call, and we need to get together and do an emergency call for justice in the United States of America, justice. And that is that we don't shop. You see, what we do is we only use part of what was successful in the civil rights movement. During the civil rights movement, people marched and sang and held rallies, and everybody's trying to do that now, and that's cool. But we also boycotted. I'm 56, so I remember some of that. Without the boycotts, if you don't have a financial reason, you got to motivate these companies. You got to motivate the government financially. Because, you see, if they look up one day a month and they see the mall lots are empty, PayPal has no activity, the grocery stores, nobody's in line, the gas stations, nobody's in line, because what's happening is that whether you want to protest the death penalty, whether you want to protest war, whether you want to protest the prison industrial complex, whether you want to protest the loss of jobs or union, you know, they're undermining the unions, whatever it is that gets on your nerves that you feel like it's unjust, join millions of Americans and let's protest together. And let's do it without, we don't have to get out on the mall like the Egyptians. We don't have to do all of that. We don't have to, you know, have big meetings. We do not have to do that. All we have to do is keep our money in our pockets one day. If we did that one day, sir, corporate America would have a hissy, and they would be interested in what we're interested in. You see, they can't hear us because we're not talking their language. Their language is money, and we're talking about human rights.
We're actually talking about having a day where we don't go to work. So it's not just a matter of not buying anything. It's not showing up to the places of employment, letting corporate America and the government know that we have the right to choose. We have the right to do for ourselves what we see fit. And one day,
so you want to not go to work on that same day, or do y'all have a day picked out?
We're still working that out. We're talking about, you know, but it would be a day where just the whole thing shuts down. No money flows either direction. No money in, no money out. We don't do anything.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then, but she was this.
Guys, I'm sorry. Let me chime in for just a minute here, because I think both ideas are awesome and in conjunction work really well. But we're missing a larger part of this problem. And the larger part of this problem is that we don't any longer have a focus on that sense of community. And I think that's really where our problem is coming down. We're not taking care of our own backyard. And that's how these corporate giants are taking us out. You know, one day we stop the money flow. Sure, they're going to pay attention to what we need at that point, but they're just going to tell us what we need to hear to get their money back flowing, if you understand what I'm saying.
They'll pay attention long enough until somebody decides to go buy a Rice Krispie treat. Then the other ones are like, yeah, I could go for a Rice Krispie treat. Not so everybody's back and doing the same thing. It's an uphill battle. You got to start small, because that's the only way to do it, is do it small. You can't beat it. We can't make it hurt.
What I'm suggesting instead is, you know, if you need to get your oil changed, don't stop Jiffy Lube. You know, go to John and Frank's oil change, even if they're $10 more. You know, that to me makes more sense. You know, you pay your neighbor.
Do it better. Have one of your buddies who knows how to do it and change the service for them. Take the money out of the equation so the taxes never make it to the funds and all the programs.
I want to let Mary know that we appreciate her calling in, and we're definitely going to check that out, her site and everything. And we're going to definitely, I mean, it sounds like a great idea on the 9th of every month, where you make an effort not to spend any money, not to be involved in any of that.
I guess the only downside I see to that is, with our plan, it's basically the businesses can't operate. With her plan, it just means that you get all your shopping done on the 8th or get all your shopping done on the 10th,
yeah,
and you didn't spend any money on the 9th. And what you're saying, TC, I totally agree. We need to start engaging in community. And the other thing is, we're talking about playing their game. We're talking about playing with their money and stuff like that. At the end of the day, my concern is, their money's not worth shit anyways. Their money, it's not worth any fucking thing. And the system's collapsing whether we participate in it or not. The bankers are watching the cow that they've been carving up. They finally run out of meat, and they don't know what to do now. So, I don't think it's with the system collapsing, with the economy collapsing, I'm not concerned about sending a message to the corporations saying that, hey, look, if you don't listen to us, we're not going to spend our money. They're not listening to us anyways. I'm concerned about what do I got to do on my own, or what I got to do with the people who are around me to make sure that I can live without those corporations. I can live without that government. I can live without any of that shit.
And that starts with
community.
That's
a tough thing to do, man. And it's actually looked down upon and frowned upon. I looked into the concept of sovereign citizenship. And, if somebody had told me there was a real thing that you could actually do this, but it's really not. It makes you an outlaw in all aspects.
Right.
To become self-sufficient.
We got Mary on the line again, so I don't know if we want to pick her up again real quick, see what else she had to put in.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
All right, go ahead.
I got it.
All right.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, yes, we hear you. I think we kind of just had to drop off there for a second.
Well, listen, the thing is, sir, and that this is just a protest. The Boycott for Justice, and you can look it up, no shopping on the 9th of any month is a protest. And as you said, people will shop on the 8th and they will shop on the 10th. It is not to shut down Wall Street. It would not do that. Because people shop the day before and day after. What it is a protest, and it shows unity. And what you were saying, that communities need to work together. And what this is an opportunity for us, all of us who are fed up, to stand up together and say, look, we are your constituents, we are your customers, and we are pissed, and we want things to change. Now, you can say that they don't care about money, okay, because our money is counterfeit, but that's a lie. Every time I turn on my TV, I see commercials because they still got stuff to sell, and America is still the main consumer of the world. While that is still the case, we need to take advantage of it and use our consumer power to bring power back to the people. So now that's not stand on that, and like I said, it's only one day a month. So I know somebody said that people will say, well, let's go get a Twinkie or whatever. Everybody can cut out shopping one day. And I guarantee you, if these people who got a love for money, they love money, and money is still the king around here. If not, look at your TV, look at your Internet, everything is something to sell. So don't trick yourself and think that they don't want to make money.
I think that's part of our problem, though. That the fact that money is king, I don't want a king. I don't want money to be a king.
What I'm saying is,
I don't want to be defined as consumer.
Stopping the war, okay? I'm interested in stopping the war, stopping environmental pollution, stopping the loss of jobs, the flow of jobs from America to other countries, and also from workers to prison. They got 2.3 million people in prison. A million of them have to get up every day and go work jobs that we should have who are free. Because most of them probably should be free also. They got them in there for having marijuana, little nothing, laws they broke. They got them in there to be prison slaves. That's where our jobs are going. So it's time for us to stand up, like you said, and have a sense of community, and let's support each other instead of, you got your calls, and I got my calls, and somebody else got their calls. If we would unite in just one day a month, say we are boycotting for justice, we are not going to participate in any merchandising this one day, it will blow their mind. And, yes, they do still care about money. So we can use that. It's not that you got to love money, but you got to understand that they do. And so use what you know about your folks. And so I'm going to get off the phone and let y'all go ahead and talk, but I just want you to please look it up. It's Boycott for Justice, and that's the number 4. And my name is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L. And, you know, you want to know how bad they can get? Do you want to know that they secretly arrested my brother in secret, just like Channa? Kept him 3 weeks, lied every day, and said they did not have him in jail. He was a mentally ill heart patient. They arrested him in secret, and they lied and said they didn't have him. This was Memphis, Tennessee that did that.
Wow.
And then when he died after 3 weeks, they said, look, we got his naked body. We had him the whole time. Do you want him? And we said, what happened? Why did you keep this man 3 weeks? Why did you lie to us? Why did you deprive him of his heart medicine? What else did you do to kill him? Tell us what? And they said, we're not telling you anything. Now, you want to know how bad America has gotten? We've gotten all the way Nazi, okay? So I'm just, you know, trying to find a way that we can work together to keep what happened to my family from happening to more families. Because it's beyond just taking your jobs and polluting your atmosphere. They are actually getting people's relatives and keeping them under secret arrest in America and returning them dead. And the United States Department of Justice is working with police departments to hide the crime.
Well, we definitely encourage everybody to check out Boycott for Justice, number 4. Google it, and Mary, we appreciate it. I mean, that's a riveting story, and it's just another example of what exactly we're talking about, that it's falling apart, and it's getting worse, and it's more and more liberties, more and more freedoms that we think we have, that it's just an illusion. So we definitely appreciate your call.
Thank you, sir.
You have a good night.
Now, to touch back real quick here, because before we picked up with Mary, Pup was actually talking about the sovereign citizenship and that it basically equates to declaring yourself as an outlaw. But I don't necessarily see something as being wrong with that. I mean, you know, if enough people stood up and said, no, you don't fucking own me anymore, that's going to have a hell of a lot more effect than, you know, not shopping one day a month or not going to work one day a year. You know, when all of a sudden you're going to have to put everybody in prison because they've all filed this paper that says, you know, hey, I don't recognize your fucking bullshit anymore. That's
yeah,
whole,
dude, you can go get it notarized.
Right. And well, you know what? I think what Mary was saying, even though, you know, my thing is, it's, again, I don't want to be a consumer. I don't want that anymore. I don't want the money to be king. I know what she's saying is that you're trying to flex some muscle, you know, and I think that's great. That, you know, they've got this movement going on. There are people out there who are, you know, who are pursuing this same issue from different directions. And the more directions that any of us can pursue this issue in, well, then hopefully the more wiggle room we get. But the idea of being, you know, the sovereign citizen thing, that definitely is something worth, you know, looking into. It's a big fuck you. It's a big fuck you to the United States. So, look, man, I don't want to be counted as a part of this anymore.
I mean,
oh, yeah, it's a huge middle finger. But the issue comes down is how far are you willing to go to defend it? In West Memphis, there was a father and son who, after being pulled over by cops, handed them their sovereign citizen papers. Then the son hopped off an AK-47 and gunned down both cops.
Yeah, I mentioned that last night, actually. I don't know if you caught it last night's show or not, but
I did not.
Yeah, last night's show was focused on a police officer that was just about an hour south of here that declared himself as a sovereign citizen and lost his job because of it. So I understand exactly what you're getting at, that there is, in fact, a compacted set of ramifications that would come with this kind of thing. But as my mom would always say, nothing good is, you know, nothing worth having is ever easy. So,
right. And it's something we've written about on Eminent Mind, too, that, you know, freedom means the freedom to starve. Freedom means assumption of all risk. If you want freedom, if you want kind of this freedom, well, then you no longer have the security of the government. You no longer have access to all the baubles that these different corporations offer you. You got freedom. So, you know, it means freedom to, you know, freedom to die, basically. Freedom to lose your job. Freedom, you know, in every sense of the word.
But I'm reaching a point, and I think a lot of people are reaching a point where, you know what, that sounds good to me.
Right.
Well, there's Oh, go ahead, Beast.
Oh, what I was going to say, what I initially, like, thought of proposing to people, and I realized that it might not be something everybody comprehends, is that we pick 5 square miles somewhere, anywhere. Let's say, for instance, it's a small harborside town because it's easier to live off of fish and grow things in a subtropical area than it is up north. You pick some small harborside, 5 square miles of some small harborside town, and you'll eventually move everybody into that area. You know, everybody who thinks like you do, that they, you know, you will work together, save what little money, the whole group contributes to bringing everybody into that area. And once you've got a large enough number of people in there, you just say, you know what, fuck you, this is our city. You know, fuck you, fuck your government. I mean, what really happens then? You know, you have
Waco.
Oh, no, I'm not talking
Ruby Ridge.
I'm not talking on those kind of small scales. I'm talking, you wait until you have tens of thousands of people there.
You know, then you become a terrorist threat.
Well, how are you a terrorist threat if one whole region?
Same way PETA, Greenpeace, and Anonymous are terrorist threats, man.
Well, I understand.
Same way
the
sovereign citizen movement is terrorist threats. As soon as you start acting in accordance against the state, even if it's completely peaceful, you're now an enemy. And I think that's something that people need to understand is as soon as you start acting on these concepts, it no longer becomes just something abstract. It becomes something very real and tangible and very much a threat to spread. And it'd be almost a virus that the government feels the urge to stamp out before it gets too much.
I understand that.
The discordant concept, of the more the disorder, the greater the effort of disorder, the greater the effort of order to reverse it. But I know what you're saying. You go out and do this illegally. But the issue is the risk is always that the government will find some reason to squash you.
Right. What I'm talking about is being low-key about this until you have enough people that if they acted in any hostile manner, the entire rest of the bleeding heart fucking world would be crying for justice. I mean, to me, it seems like the most logical way to do it. You know, once you have a concentration of tens of thousands of people in one area that say, fuck you, these are our borders, you have the makings for a real revolution. I mean, it's the same kind of concept that happened here in the United States just a little over 234 years ago.
You know, I think I mentioned this in another forum, but it's along the same ideas that you're talking about, but it works within the system. The idea that you've got all these like-minded people, we're all talking about, let's say it's us. And we're all talking about, we got all these different problems, we got all these different things we want to accomplish, and we want more freedom. We want more sovereignty, okay? Well, let's say we pick some place, like you're saying, a coastal city or whatever, and one of us into a fucking trailer park there, okay? we get a trailer. We're renting a trailer, or we buy a trailer in a trailer park there, and we establish ourselves. Jason moves into a trailer park there, and he opens up a tattoo shop, whatever. And then you move there. Okay, you saved up your fucking money or whatever, you got a trailer, you're living in the same trailer park, all right, and you work at my tattoo shop until you can find a job doing something else, someplace else. And so on. Wicked Pup moves to the trailer park, you know, whoever, all these different people move to the trailer park, all right, until we totally occupy that one fucking trailer park. And then we pool our money together and we buy the fucking thing. So now we own the goddamn trailer park. We also represent a strong contingent of the working population in the city we live in, okay? And we continue to invite people that think like us to move to this city where you already have a foothold. You get here and you're going to work for one of us, all right, until you can go out and get your own fucking job. And eventually we elect our own people onto the city council. We elect our own people into the positions of power in that city until we've taken that city over. And the thing is this is not an original plan. You see people from other countries. You see the Muslim community doing this. You see the Asian community doing this. You see, I mean, the Jewish community. All these different communities have done this in the past, where they come into a place where that district becomes theirs, where if you live there, you're part of that group. So it's within the system. So there's nothing to revolt against because, yeah, it's still playing the game. It still has the look of, you know, regular Americana, but it's all these people of the same ideology who grow their own food, who share a meal together, who do all this stuff. They all just have to congregate one place that took it over.
And that's precisely what I'm talking about, man, is that eventually it gets to such a density that you reach a point where you can say, fuck you. But in the meantime, you know, it's just like a Borg simulation happening, you know?
Right. So it's not going out and buying up some acreage in the middle of the woods and setting up tents, although that would be cool, too. But, you know, it's not going out and buying up some acreage. It's showing up and, you know, it's subtle. It's the in-between. It's not the extreme of, you know, going out and doing the Waco thing, and it's not sitting here. Wishing you could and dealing with whatever you got going on, you know, on a regular basis.
Right. I think that's the only option at this point. As long as we remain in large distance, you know, the people who are dissatisfied, as long as they're disorganized, they have no way to really respond. You know, it's you against an army. When it's really not you against an army.
There's a question in the chat room. Is it better to have that concentrate or being separate or having the power in numbers across a large area? Where I think when we're spread out as sparsely as we are, where if TC needs TC and his family are fucking hungry. You know, and for whatever reason tonight he's got no food in his place. The cupboards are bare, that kind of shit. And he knows that there's food in my place, but I'm in Austin, Texas. Well, it's a hell of a walk from where he's at in Florida, Austin, Texas, to come, you know, break bread with me at the Sorrel House, you know? Whereas if we're all in one place, it's easier to pool your resources. And we still would be reaching out to people who are all over the world, basically. You know, we would still be having these conversations. It's just that our resources would be pooled. Our efforts would be redoubled by having your neighbor being the guy you've been bullshitting with online for 10 years.
I just want to say real quick that these do exist.
What's that?
And I want to say communes do exist in what you're describing.
Yeah?
There's a few of them. There's an international directory you can find online listing all the ones that do exist and the ones that are forming. The History Channel recently just did they were off in the mountains. It was just about 20 or 30 people, but they raised their own animals. They grew their own food. They were their own butchers, their own deli runners, their own farmers, their own water getters, their own everything. And they were completely absent in the system as it exists.
Right.
I don't think we're talking about a commune necessarily. This idea that, you know, you pick some small town somewhere, you know, like we're saying, somewhere, you just fucking anywhere. You pick some small town and you just start moving there. You encourage your fellow whatever to move there.
You're talking about infiltration.
Right, where you move there, so you're there legally, you've got a job there legally, you're still engaged in the system, and eventually you have the numbers, you have the masses to politically take over, to politically start, you know, and then once you have your people in the city council, once you got your guy up as mayor or whatever, well then the laws start to change to favor the new environment you're creating. You know, the situation starts to change. It's what the writers in Mexico City have been telling Mexicans for years, to retake the Louisiana Purchase by, you know, going into the United States and, you know, going there in numbers, getting jobs, participating in the economy, marrying the women there and everything else, having children, and getting those children, those second or third generation immigrants, into positions of political power.
The only problem I have with that is it's just not immediate enough for me. And that's a generational thing that will take, well, generations to accomplish.
Okay, because that's true. But if you're looking for immediate, if you're ready to do it, let's say within the next year, if you're ready to do it, we pick a city, we pick the town that we're going to move into. There's a trailer park there. It's going to cost you, $500 a month for, utilities and the whole bit. You got to live in a fucking trailer. Living in a trailer sucks. But we all move into this fucking trailer park, and we all pool our resources, which means that, like I'm saying, if there's a day that you're out of fucking food, you're hungry or whatever, you come to my place and we break bread together. We support one another, all right? And it has to start that way. It has to start with a group of people willing to take that risk and make that commitment to one another. And once you have that core, once you have that kernel of people who are willing to do that for each other, who are willing to make that move, to say, fuck it, we're gonna throw away pretty much everything we've got established, wherever it is we're at, and we're doing this. Okay? Once you got that going, eventually you see a point where the shackles aren't as tight around our throats because we're the ones in power in that particular area.
Well, yeah, and that would be a commune.
What was that?
That would be a commune, or at least it would start out that way.
Well, yeah.
How does this start out? I know what you're saying. Okay, when you say commune, yeah, it would be. We'd all be living in the same place, and we'd be watching out for each other. If you want to call it a commune or collective or whatever, an extended family, an ideological, whatever, that's fine. But you'd also have to pull your own weight. You still have to go out and get a job. You still have to go out and, the idea is that you're as self-sufficient as possible. It's only that when your ability to do for yourself reaches its limit for whatever reason, then you have these other people to fall back on immediately. Here in the United States, we used to call that our family because your mom and dad, your grandpa and grandpa lived in the same plot of land you did. Your sons and daughters lived in the same plot of land you did. You all worked the same fields together and everything. So, it's going back to that mentality. We could be self-sufficient, but we also would have one another to rely upon. Right now, if I walked out the door and went downstairs and knocked on my fucking neighbor's door and asked if I could get a sandwich, if they answered the door, they'd tell me to fuck off.
Yeah. I don't think I really have that much problem here. That's a location thing, man. Here, we got a lot of hippies, and their influence is spreading widely. Like, it's just the entire city is taking massive efforts to become more natural.
Well, see, and that's kind of what we're talking about already happening, only this would be an intentional deal. You do see these kind of things evolving in different communities, and they're usually based on some kind of common identifier. We're just talking about another common identifier, like I'm saying. Or like Jason's been saying, Jason and I moved to this neighborhood, and we all share similar ideas about things, and then it becomes about taking care of the community. And now, we can't think about this happening on a global scale ever, because it's obvious. I mean, what at least 10,000 years of written human history or documented human history, we've never been able to get along. So I think it's time maybe we accept this reality that human beings aren't ever going to get along, not all of them.
No, that's why it becomes necessary for this to only happen on a small scale.
Right. Which is what you end up doing is that you end up having these different districts. You're having these different blocks of people who are interrelated enough, who are acquainted with one another enough to tolerate each other. It's what you see going on in the immigrant community right now, where people move in, somebody moves in and works whatever bullshit job they got to work to make enough money to bring the next person in or to educate, to make sure that, their younger brother who they're bringing in goes to college and gets an education. And then when the younger brother gets a good job, well, then he pulls more people in and so on and so forth. It's a long, drawn-out system, but if we're talking about a group of, you know, five, six, seven able-bodied adults or couples, five, six couples of able-bodied adults who are able to move into an area where there's some economic growth going on, where there's opportunities, even if it's waiting fucking tables, well, then some of the shit that we're talking about could actually happen.
See, my only issue with that is it's not being as self-sufficient as possible. It's still relying on jobs being there rather than creating a situation where you can sustain yourself.
Right. Well, you're working towards that, I think, is the idea. The idea is that you use the resources that are currently available and you use them up until you get to a point within your little community or your little group or clan or extended family, whatever you want to call them, until you guys get to the point where you are completely self-sufficient, where, you know, you go out every morning and rotate the windmill in just the right direction so that it gives us enough power for the day. You know, that at noon, Lexi hits the solar panels and moves them 12 degrees so we get the maximum amount of, you know, sun facing to it. Whatever those things are that happen building up to it, that's a process getting there. We're not just going to be able to light our house on fire today and all decide to meet up, I don't know, 30 miles north of Gainesville in some little fucking swamp in Florida and think that
okay. You could take out a bunch of shitty credit card loans and use that money.
Well, right. I don't think we're talking about total self-sufficiency either. I think self-sufficiency, that's a pipe dream also.
I don't think it is. I know it isn't. It happens. It's possible.
Oh,
it's
sure.
It's possible, but
it's not the ideal that I think we're looking for. I think, you know what, if I wanted to be self-sufficient, you're absolutely right. I could go get a fucking tent and carry my ass out in the woods and buy my own food and everything else. It'd be a very rudimentary existence, and I'd be pretty isolated. I'd be pretty much out there by myself.
Yeah.
So that's not what I want out of my life. I don't want that kind of self-sufficiency.
That's where the original concept of communes comes into play, is to find others like that and do it in group, like the group I was talking about earlier. That's exactly what they did. They built their own shacks. They managed to get a hold of enough pigs to breed. They let whoever can put the pig down, the most humane, put the pig down. They grow their own food, but it's a group effort just so they're not alone.
That's not self-sufficiency, though. You know, if you got a bunch of people living in a circle of tents who go out and get their own fish every day, you know, and then just they bullshit every night around their individual campfires. What you're talking about is go out in the mountains, get some pigs, okay?
Yeah.
And then you split those resources up. What we're talking about, the pigs we're talking about getting, we're not talking about going out to the mountains. We're talking about going into some town, some jungle, that, you know, the concrete jungle someplace. And the pigs we're talking about getting, they're not pigs. They're jobs.
Well, yeah,
okay, so
Then you're living in Greenwood Village with a bunch of heroin addicts.
We're doing what?
It's a Greenwich Village with a bunch of heroin addicts.
With a bunch of heroin addicts?
It was kind of a bad joke, man. Because none of these concepts are original. I mean, people have been trying this, and people have been doing this for a long time. A lot of the artist movements, like punk and beat and all that shit, started out as small individuals who found others like them and just decided to work together.
Right. Well, I think it's going to come. The thing is I think this idea that has been pervasive in our society, that has been the undercurrent in our society, I think it's going to switch. I think it's going to become more overt. I think it's going to become more the way of things. And the faster that you're on that track, the better off you'll be.
No, I fully agree. That's what I've been saying for a while now, is I see this happening in people and places where it's just not expected. It's slow, but it is happening. And it's even happening on a better scale where I'm seeing gardens pop up in the inner city. I know people who have managed to get a hold of their own livestock in the middle of a downtown area, a downtown metropolitan area. They got just enough yard to raise chickens. And I see people working together so they don't fucking starve when shit hits the fan.
It seems like it's the best way. I mean, face it, if you try to go out into the woods and just said, oh, fuck everybody, it would be another Waco. But if you operate just enough within, you know, the current oppressions system, just right on that borderline, just enough to appease them, you know, you can secure a certain range of area with the kind of freedom that you want. You know, you're not going to get police officers from, you know, another area to come in there and arrest you for dope or whatever because, well, you know, the whole town.
Nobody's going to fucking call cops.
Nobody's going to call the cops. That's right.
Better yet, the cops are your own people.
That's precisely what I'm talking about.
That has happened in smaller towns where the cops, they're more willing to let you go if you're from there. Just because they know you. They're like, all right, we'll just get your ass home. And that kind of shit happens here, not very often.
Right.
But it does happen.
The move away from small-town America that happened, I would say, it started really in the 70s and just kind of blossomed on out from there, has been, just in my own personal opinion, the catalyst for a lot of the problems that we're facing. You know, it used to be that maybe one person from the town every few years would actually go off to a big city college somewhere and not come back. You know, most of the time they went off, got their big education, and they came home and contributed to the community with whatever, you know, learned at the off in college. You know, you go study to be a doctor, you become a great cancer doctor, whatever the fuck they're called. You come home and you see the people at home for cancer with the technology that might be cutting edge or, you know, stuff that, you know, people who'd lived there for a long time hadn't already acquired. You go off and you get the technology and you bring it back.
Right. And it was due to the economic bubble that grew from the 70s through the 80s and 90s that, you know, there were more opportunities for you to go out to the city and apply that degree. That bubble has burst. So now, I mean, things we need to face. We're going to have a shift in our value system. We're going to have a shift in what it is we think is important. And, you know, you recognize that, you know, in the hunter-gatherer sense, what is it that I need to accomplish to protect myself and my family and make shit happen? Now, a lot of things we pay attention to as a society anymore are just there to keep us distracted, are just there to keep us pacified and keep us thinking that everything is okay when it's clearly not.
Precisely. It's exactly, I guess, the overarching point of it. And you can tell this just by really taking a look down the streets of most neighborhoods, man. Everything is not okay.
I want to throw out the number again, 347-989-1371. If you want to call in and share your thoughts with what we're talking about, and again, this is going to be, I think, this should be an ongoing topic that we're going to keep beating this drum, basically. I kind of want to get into, you know, we're talking about some very overreaching ideas. I want to kind of want to get into specifics of future shows. I want to talk about, you know, things that maybe you should be doing today to prepare for the shit hitting the fan. You know, what you got that, you know, is you're ready to, you know, to make happen should all of a sudden the systems you rely on, the things that you rely on being there, grocery stores, the policeman down the street, that kind of thing, when that shit goes away, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good sense of focus. I think also, that's really what it comes down to. When, because it's not a question of if the shit hits the fan, it's a question of when shit hits the fan right in your backyard. you know, what's going to happen.
Right, and it's, if you know what you're going to do, if you know what your plan is when, you know, when those systems fail, I guess the question that comes up in my mind then is, why aren't you doing it already? Or are you doing it already? You know, are you already engaged in some of these processes that make you less dependent on these different systems so that, you know, if it goes away, if the grocery store goes away tomorrow, you're taken care of.
You know, I think one thing that people can do just to start off is to start stocking non-perishable items. You know, you do this anyway in preparation for storms. I mean, in Florida here, we have hurricane season, and every year there's a mob that rushes to the gas station to buy canned goods and fucking jugs of water. You know, they keep gallons of gasoline off in, behind their house or in their shed or whatever. They stock up on these resources. Well, it doesn't hurt to buy a 79-cent can of soup every time you go to the grocery store and toss it in your cabinet and just keep it there as your back stock. That's one thing that you definitely make sure that you can do.
Right on. And there are cultures who, and this isn't in any way to disparage any particular culture, but a lot of, especially the old Jewish folk who, knew of the Holocaust or whose parents were involved in the Holocaust or whatever, they made sure that their families had, I can't think of what they called them, but basically go bags, basically. They had, a set of luggage that was packed at all times. That there was a certain amount of money, there was a certain amount of clothing, there's a certain amount of, identification and personal items or whatever, that if the shit hit the fan, they just grab those fucking bags and they get the fuck out of Dodge because they weren't going to go through that shit again. It's something that I think it's a good idea. My concern, and this is something I was discussing with Jamie tonight, I've been thinking about, I'm going to invest in an older model van, and I'm going to load it up with all kinds of provisions and everything else, shotguns and everything. I'm going to load this fucking van up, and it's going to sit in my parking lot for that day. The concern I have is, when that day arrives, will I have enough advance warning to get my van to drive the fuck out of the city?
I think that's why it's necessary to create some kind of a virtual railroad or information net, that people in different areas should be communicating at the very least. The idea would be kind of like, coordinating between different clans,
Right on. They're coming. They're coming for you.
Yeah. The shot heard around the world. That's the first thing I think of when you're talking about this.
Well, Jamie and I were talking about how, it almost have to be, to have that kind of preparation, to be ready to be gone, you'd almost have to start being gone the majority of your time. That you'd almost have to start spending most of your weekends out in the woods someplace in case the shit hit the fan. Whenever you could, you wanted to be away. And I don't know. And the thing that's hard for me, and I know it's hard for you too, TC, is that we got kids where there's a split custody situation going on, where, if the shit hit the fan, one of my kids might be 1,200 miles away.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, what do we do? How do we deal with that?
You have to have a plan, man. You have to have a plan of actions, set in place. You have to have an agreement with the other parent, even for as ignorant as my baby's mother can be at times, she's willing to listen to me if the right level of concern is in my voice. And she knows shit's fucked up too. So, we actually are facing the potential of a hurricane sometime in the middle of this week. And with her being two and a half hours south of my son in a place that in 2004 pretty much got completely destroyed, and me being on a little bit higher land, I gave her the instruction tonight that if it looks like it's going to be a Category 3 or better and it's heading towards you, get in your fucking van and drive up here. I don't care if you bring your husband and your new baby. At least we know our little group's safe.
Right. Yeah, I haven't found the way to broach the whole topic with my ex. She's not an idiot, but it's, I don't know if it'll be as obvious to her as it is to us. But it's definitely something. I know that Gabriel's 11. She's on this kind of shit, and I know it is something they've been talking about. So there is talk in the works of them moving here to Texas, which will make my life a whole lot less stressful.
Right on. And this is what I'm talking about, man, is this kind of thing. You know, one thing that I've noticed, my entire family over the last decade has dispersed from this area. 10 years ago, there was pretty close to a dozen of us living within a 3-mile radius of each other. Now, the closest we are is 140 miles. Yeah, that's the closest point. So, but, you know, I think the overall idea of family doesn't hold quite the value that it used to either, meaning that, like, for instance, in mine, I have my idiot brother who, no matter what I say, would be like, yeah, everything's good right now, just to despite me, you know? So he obviously needs to find his own clan then.
Right. Yeah,
I live with my family and they fucking rule.
Go ahead,
dude. As you can say, I live with my family and they're just fucking awesome.
Now, see, this is what I'm saying, man. It depends. Some people have a good relationship with their family and some people don't. And
like my dad, he grew up in a house with two other families. One was his Italian grandparents, and the other was his Scottish grandparents, and they were both family-orientated, and it's kind of spread down the line.
Right. You know, before we really get going here, a few years ago, I had these T-shirts printed up that I designed. I don't know if you remember these or not, Jason, but on the back of them was the silhouette of the United States. And it had a Ben Franklin quote, which is something that I give a lot of thought to on a daily basis. And that quote, you guys have probably heard this, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways, is those that will give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty or safety. This, to me, is why I thought it was you know, such a keen point earlier when I was reading your comments on Eminent Mind, and I saw you say, what was actually a post that you did, now that I'm thinking about it, but I saw that you said, you know, freedom means having the freedom to starve. You know, the question is, you know, are you going to sit and be comfortable for too long? You know, Jason...
Right.
You're sitting here talking about would you have enough notice? Well, you know, that depends on whether you're willing to actually look at the warning signs. You know, well, how do we know a storm's coming? The sky gets a little bit dark and the wind picks up, and that most of the time gives you enough notice to get under some shelter. You know, but if you're not looking up at the sky or thinking, hey, why is it getting darker? You know, when it starts raining, you're going to smack yourself in the forehead and go, oh, that's what that was all about.
And I think it's coming. I think we've reached that point where if action's not taken soon, it's going to be too late. It's that, and it's the exact same thing. It's not going to be as obvious as a thunderstorm. It's not going to be, we're not going to have weathermen telling us that the hurricane is coming or that the hurricane could come this direction. We're going to try to keep that shit secret. They're going to try to keep people from knowing what's going on until it's absolutely too late to do anything about it.
Right on, man. So, I mean, yeah, the fucking 2 hours blew by like nothing. I can't imagine how the next few weeks are going to be.
Right on. So, yeah, and we're going to keep, for those folks that are still listening, we're going to keep talking about this. And I think next week we're going to focus in a little bit more on, you know, educating yourself. You know, what kind of things you should need to know. Like my fucking thing, I'm kind of excited about this. I want to learn how to make beer. because the reason they made beer, you know, back in ancient times is because the water wasn't safe to drink. It was only by processing it in clay, by turning it into beer, that you could really get, you know, you could really kind of guarantee that it was safe to drink, that it was there was not as much disease in it because it had that alcohol content. So I want to be able to make beer. I want to be able to churn my own butter. As crazy as that sounds.
Right on. I'm actually kind of fortunate in that I grew up in a real rural area of Ohio, at least until my teens, and so I actually did see how they made cider and you know, churn milk, butter, and ice cream, and all different kinds of things like that. It might be a little bit rusty in my mind, but I certainly remember how the processes went.
Right on, right? And while the internet is up, while the information is available, I'm definitely going to be digging into that. I'm looking for some SCS survival guides, you know, the British survival guides. Definitely looking for some of those. And definitely thinking about how I have my possessions are too cumbersome, basically. So peeling off more possessions, investing more in things that might actually be of value to me someday rather than just these little things that I think reflect some aspect of my personality.
Right on. And I think actually when you stop and you really think about it, you're not trading out your personality, you're enhancing it.
Absolutely.
So that's something else I wanted to point out, that you know, 9/11 Beretta that you decided to purchase, that's an extension of you. You can customize it with hollow point armor piercing bullets, you know?
Right on. So not that we're talking about buying any illegal weapons or anything, you know, these would all be registered weapons, but definitely.
Right.
That's something else I wanted to talk about too. Registered and unregistered weapons. Is it a good idea to have a registered weapon in your home, especially when they come to take away the guns?
I think it's a good idea to have a registered weapon, and I think it's a good idea to have an unregistered weapon. that's what I think. I say you hand out the gun they know you have, and as they turn around to walk away, you point the gun that they don't know you have and say, "Can I have my other gun back, please?"
Right on. So we got 8 minutes left until the end of the 2-hour segment, but man, I'm talked out.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
So we're going to do this again, though, next Sunday. So if you enjoyed this evening's show, definitely tune in because we're going to keep this thing going. And I think we're going to be talking about this for a while.
Right. Now, I'm kind of hoping that Sean here will be kind enough to join us next week, too. I know he's pitching in on Fridays now, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how I got conned into that.
I don't think it was a con, man. Whether you want to admit it or not, there's that part of you that wants to be heard. So,
dude, last week I've been awake 15 minutes to go to the bathroom, and my plan was to go back to sleep because I had to work that night. When Org goes to me and goes, "Yeah, you're hosting with me today," I'm like, "Fuck, there goes my sleep."
Right on.
And now it's just kind of like, all right, well, I'll just keep calling in. I've got shit to say. Might as well.
Right on. Right on. So, Jason, man, been a little bit tiring on the home front, I'm assuming. You had that, you know, Rush tattoo fiasco just prior to calling into the show today. I wasn't even sure if you were going to be here when I got here. Anything relaxing or fun to talk about?
I got nothing going on tomorrow. I kind of planned it out that way. So nothing scheduled tomorrow. I think I'm just going to chill out and put some more shit on eBay. So that's pretty much the extent of my plan tomorrow. I need to work on, and I know he's listening, I am working on Ken's drawing, his tattoo drawing. We're going to get all that taken care of. And for real this time, it'll be done. So we're going to get that taken care of. I can't wait to get his tattoo done.
Right on. I guess tomorrow myself I get the job of calling the Department of Labor here in Florida. I think it's actually called Innovations of Workforce or some shit. They got rid of actually having any kind of Department of Labor here, but my previous employer owes me a pretty good sized chunk of money that they don't want to pay up, so I'm going to see what goes on from there. So I guess everybody should wish me luck as I start to actually buck the system a little bit.
Right on, man.
And I mean, I'm actually to the point where I know that I can file paperwork to put a lien on their business for my money. So depending on what news I get from Florida's Department of Labor tomorrow, that may be a route that I take. Which, if that's the case, I'm going to calculate it by, like, I don't know, 300%. And figure that's, you know, for distress and suffering. And attach a nice, healthy lien to their business. So it should be interesting.
I don't know. We'll get them for all you can, man, because you deserve it.
Right on, dude. So that's my deal, and I don't think the whole world really knows yet that I'm no longer a fireworks salesman. But since we got a few minutes left of the show or whatever, I thought I would share that I got a notice back from unemployment. Basically, in a nutshell, my employer could give them no reason for why I was fired other than I was no longer in compliance with the company's policies. So the state of Florida recognizes that they fired me for no reason.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that works in my favor when I go after this money, because I kind of had a feeling they were going to be dicks about it. It's not like it's a few hundred dollars. It's, you know, almost 10 grand. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you get the money, man. And then that you can really just pursue what you want to do for a little while.
Yeah, well, I'm in the process of, I found out that the state of Florida, and well, I already knew, the state of Florida offers a program called Vocational Rehabilitation for People with Disabilities. Well, as everybody knows, I'm hard of hearing. There is an accredited tattoo school in the state of Florida that has already had previous students graduate from there with their full boat being paid for by Vocational Rehabilitation. So that's something I'm looking at, because I figured the job market here in Florida for tattooing has got to be somewhat slender comparatively to, like, West Virginia, you know, one hick West Virginia, where, you know, you take whatever guy can throw some ink. Here in Florida, everybody wants to be the next Miami Ink. So, but being a graduate from an accredited school might be worth a little more than having an apprenticeship with Joe Blow down the street.
Right on, right on.
So
definitely,
you know, that's my plan. That starts towards the end of this month. I start going after that. In the meantime, I've been running ads on Craigslist because I can do small motor repairs. I'm actually pretty good with small engines. So, you know, looking to pick up some extra money there. You know, emergency help. You know, it's Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Who's going to come, you know, fix your small motor? Well, I'll do it. And that's provided that I can get a hold of the parts.
Right on, man.
So, yeah, that's what's going on here in my neck of the woods, man. I saw my kid for the first time in about 2.5 weeks. He's going to school, getting big. He actually behaved himself all the way up until his mom came to pick him up, and then I had to remind him that he hadn't left my house yet.
Yeah, he's getting over on his mother then, is he?
Oh, yeah, he works her left and right. My son has an inherent ability to manipulate people. I don't know quite where he got it from, but he uses it. So, yeah, But anyway, we got just about a minute left. We'll go ahead and roll out the outro and thank everybody who tuned in. Don't forget to check out eminentmind.info. And that's it. We'll talk to everybody next week.
All right, man. Later.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?